Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have with us on the show Anne Gager, who holds a PhD in zoology from the University of Washington and completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard. She is a senior fellow of the Center for Science and Culture and serves as a scientist at Biologic Institute, as well as Director of Science Communications at the Center for Science and Culture. She joins us again today to share about how chimpanzee and human genomes differ, this time looking at non-coding DNA. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Gager.
Glad to be here.
What is so-called junk DNA, and how is it used to support common descent? Didn't Francis Collins mention this in his book, The Language of God?
He did, and he used it as an argument to say that we share common ancestry with mice, chimps, everything. What does he mean by junk, though, and why does he call it junk? Well, the truth is only about 2% of our genome codes for protein, and this was a big surprise when it was discovered that only 2% of our genome makes protein, and 48% of it is made up of these kinds of repeating elements, sometimes called mobile genetic elements, that appear to resemble viral DNA that once copied itself and inserted it in various places around the genome. So the idea was that these viral-like stretches of DNA hopped around, copied themselves multiple times, and filled up the genome with junk, leftover detritus or flotsam and jetsam, as Collins referred to it. You can think of it as being like the junk drawer at home, which is full of broken rubber bands and leadless pencils and keys that nobody knows what they go to. So is it the case, though, that this junk is useless leftover detritus? Well, we now know that it has function, that much of it is involved in regulating the behavior of genes and the structure of chromosomes and how genes are expressed. So it also helps perhaps provide ways for organisms to respond to their environments genetically. Let me explain some of what that means. But before I do, let me tell you how Collins has changed his mind. Collins said, when speaking at a J.P. Morgan healthcare conference in San Francisco, and I quote, "In terms of junk DNA, we don't use that term anymore because I think it was pretty much a case of hubris to imagine that we could dispense with any part of the genome as if we knew enough to say it wasn't functional. Most of the genome that we used to think was there for spacer turns out to be doing stuff." So Collins is admitting that it's not junk, but that doesn't mean that he's acknowledging that we didn't come from a common ancestor with mice. He still accepts that, but maybe some of the things we talk about in this session will make him think otherwise.
What are types of mobile genetic elements?
Okay, there are two kinds that I'm going to talk about. One is called SINES, S-I-N-E-S, stands for short interspersed nuclear elements. Obviously easier to say SINES. And the other is LINES, long interspersed nuclear elements, LINES. They're types of what look to be mobile genetic elements that are now mostly inert in the genome, not moving around, but they do have a function. SINES represent 12% of the genome, and among other things, they help to specify in which cells genes should be expressed. So what tissues genes are turned on. There is a kind of sign called ALU, which is specific to chimps and humans, and 7,000 of those ALUs are specific to us, not in chimps. And these signs tend to be located near particular kinds of genes that do particular kinds of things. So it would look like they're involved in regulating specific kinds of functions. One thing that ALUs do that's really kind of cool is that if you put an ALU in front of a gene, it causes the gene transcript, the RNA, to be edited. Now, people used to think that you could only get what was in the DNA to be in the RNA. You copied it straight without changing anything. Well, it looks like there are cues, like ALUs, that cause the RNA to be edited. The nucleotides are actually changed after it's been copied from the DNA. somebody's gone back with an eraser and rewritten things. So where does this RNA editing take place? Well, guess. Happens most notably in the human brain. And it's largely species specific. That means the editing is largely in us and not in chimps. You can think of reasons why it might be that that's involved in why we differ from chimps. But it's not just in the brain. It's essential for development, for our growth as an embryo and later. And improper editing results in diseases like cancer and psychiatric disorders, too. So obviously, RNA editing is important, and it's alleles that are involved in controlling RNA editing.
How about lines? What are their uses?
Well, they seem to be involved in regulating the way chromosomes behave, how they cluster in the nucleus, how they're packed. They inhibit gene expression instead of turn it on. Thus, they play an essential role in the organization of the nucleus. They help direct different kinds of cells to develop in the brain. Here's an astonishing thing. Lines actually move to new locations in the developing brain, to different spots in different cells. They hop around. They rewrite our genetic instructions as the brain is developing. Just to repeat myself so everybody gets it, lines and signs are species-specific, many of them. We have a unique set of these elements in our genomes compared to chimps. It should be apparent from everything I've said that these species-specific elements can make a profound difference in our anatomy, our physiology, our behavior, not to mention our brains.
Exactly how much of the genome is copied into RNA? You mentioned that 2% codes for proteins.
Well, here's another astonishing fact. People thought 2% proteins, 2% RNA. Turns out 70 to 90% of the genome is transcribed into RNA, and it doesn't produce any protein. People call these long stretches of RNA that are copied in from the non-coding DNA link RNAs or long non-coding RNAs. They can be nested within genes that code for proteins. They can go in either direction. They can come from DNA that doesn't code for anything. They often start or stop from signs and lines. Now, these RNAs, their function isn't always known. They tend to be species-specific, which is perhaps one reason why evolutionary biologists like to discount them, because they're not conserved across species. So they've been called junk. Yet when examined, and some have been, they often have functions.
What are these functions?
Well, they can act to change the DNA architecture and link different stretches of DNA together. They can loop the DNA into functional domains. They can tether the DNA to the outside of the nucleus when it's not needed. They can prevent expression from one region to another. So you can think of them as involved in the operating system of the DNA. This is important because overexpression of genes or defective expression of genes can lead to diseases like cancer. And many of these long non-coding RNAs, link RNAs, are tissue-specific, and there are human-specific link RNAs expressed in the brain.
Are there other differences in how DNA is expressed?
Yep, there are regions in the genome called human accelerated regions, HARs for short, where their sequences differ substantially from chimp and other related mammalian sequences. The evolutionary interpretation is that there's been a burst of evolutionary change in these regions after the separation of the chimp and the human lineage. Of course, we know that they could be different by design, and perhaps from the beginning. Interestingly, these HARs tend to be located near developmental genes, transcription factors, and genes expressed in the, can you guess? The brain. Then there are all kinds of endemic infectious retroviruses. There are two kinds, and they're shared between most non-human primates, but we lack most of them. If we are descended from a common ancestral population with chimps, we should carry these viruses, yet we don't. Either we were purged of the viruses or we never had them. And lastly, there are rearrangements in the DNA, stretches of DNA that are inverted, turned backwards in humans compared to chimps. This contributes greatly to human and chimp differences. Some 32 million bases of human-specific DNA are due to insertions of DNA. Insertions greater than 15,000 bases contribute 8 million bases of human-specific DNA. So you can see that I could go on. There are too many other things. The last thing to mention is I've talked about all these regulatory elements, lines, signs, regions of DNA that differ, HARs. There's the fact that these genes and these regulatory elements have to work together in a network. If the genome sounds complicated, it is, because it needs to be complicated in order to enable the timing and the location of different gene expression. You can compare it to a computer. Genes are grouped into folders and then superfolders. The DNA is organized into loops, then megafolders. Chromosomes are arrayed in the nucleus, with each with its own territory. Genes in active folders take in various inputs and combine them. They function like logic gates. The output of the cellular logic gates combines, and the outcome is carefully regulated cellular behavior. We may share 92 or even 99% of our DNA sequence with chimps, but it's how the DNA is used that matters.
So not only do we differ from chimps in our genome, but also in how our DNA is used. Next time, we'll talk about physiological and anatomical differences between humans and chimps. Thanks for coming on the show today, Dr. Gager.
I'm glad to be here.
This is Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Join us next time. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute, 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.